Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
The Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Blair Horner, the Executive Director of the New York Public Interest Research Group, or NYPIRG. Welcome, Blair.
Thanks for having me, Alan.
Well, Blair, let's start, obviously, with the trial. Everybody's been waiting for it and waiting for it and waiting for it. And there was the famous poet who wrote, not with a, you know, bang but a whimper. It doesn't seem that this is going well for the prosecution.
Yeah, I mean, it's, of course, always hard to tell, but the latest report from the jury was that they described themselves as hopelessly deadlocked over what they should do. And if it ends up in a hung jury, then it'll be up to the prosecution to decide if they want to do a retrial or not.
Well,
it's a complicated case, you know, and so it's gone on for a long time, and I think the jury's, you know, maybe is too deep into the weeds to sort of figure this stuff out. Or there's, again, you have to be convicted beyond a reasonable doubt. And certainly in terms of the law, people may not like what happened, but in terms of the law, they may not feel like there's a federal violation.
So Joe Pococo is on trial along with the people he is alleged to have bribed. He has been described by the governor as his third brother, the one that his father Mario loved the most. And one of the big charges is, in graft, is that he got a slow show, not a no-show job, meaning for his wife. His wife came, she didn't distinguish herself. On the other hand, she showed up. I think that must be a tough one for the jury. If she hadn't come at all, maybe that would be a different story.
Yeah, I mean, the argument is, as you alluded, there's two specific economic development projects that are the focus of the federal case. One is in Syracuse, and one is in the Mid-Hudson Valley. The Syracuse one, there's an allegation that the company involved transferred basically $30,000 directly to Pococo, and the way it went through, the way the prosecution describes it is, there was a deal where the developer in Syracuse said that they were having problems with the labor agreement in Syracuse. They needed some help from the governor's office in order to get the bureaucrats to sort of take their foot off their neck and not tell them that they have to comply with what's called a labor peace agreement with the local union. They asked Howe to intervene and get Pococo to help them. Allegedly, he did. And there was no labor peace agreement, and the company was happy. They gave the money to Howe, who then gave it to Pococo. So that one's a little more complicated. It's not as much money. The second issue is the one you're talking about, which deals with the natural gas plant in the Mid-Hudson Valley, where there the company hired Pococo's wife on a low-show job, paid her a lot of money, and when she left, they replaced her with someone who got paid a fraction of what she did. The allegation there is that the roughly $300,000 that they paid the wife was really to get Pococo to help them in various regulatory proceedings, both at the state and in an agreement that was happening with New Jersey at the time, to get the company the various permits it needed to build the power plant. And so there, again, both of these are sort of complicated. It's not direct. And on top of it, at the time, or most of the time that these cases were being under review, and Pococo was acting as the governor's campaign manager. And so part of the defense's argument is he wasn't a public officer. Therefore, he could not enforce what the prosecution alleges that he did. And so, again, it's complicated, and complication makes it easier for people to say, well, maybe what he did was bad, but it's not beyond a reasonable doubt that he violated federal law.
Now, you're being quoted on this stuff in the major newspapers, the New York Times, other places, Blair, because you say that even if Pococo is not found guilty in this, that what might happen is people might have a sense of how dirty Albany is. Is that right?
Well, I mean, there's two things, right? The issue is whether or not he violated federal law, and then what do we think about what we have seen? I mean, the prosecution released emails and exhibits and everything else in the course of the trial, which shows lots of things that raise serious ethics questions at the state level. So, for example, the prosecution released documents showing that it certainly looks like Prococo was operating the campaign, the governor's reelection campaign, out of the governor's office while he was the campaign manager. So how did that happen? They also showed that this lobbyist, this guy Todd Howe, was communicating regularly with top-ranking officials of the Cuomo administration using their personal emails discussing government business. Well, how did that happen? I mean, so there's a number of issues in terms of campaign finance, in terms of ethics, where I think the verdict is in on Albany, which is that it is guilty of a fatally flawed ethics system, irrespective of whether or not Prococo is convicted of a federal crime.
Now, how does this hurt Andrew Cuomo, comes the question. Because when he became governor, he said he was going to clean up Albany. He had been putting people in jail for ethics violations when he was the attorney general. Now he comes to Albany, and there was a famous commission, which is almost forgotten now, the Moreland Act Commission. Perhaps you could remind us what that was all about.
At the time, the governor, it was a few years ago, it was 2013, I believe, the governor was expressing his frustration with what he described as the sort of glacial pace of ethics reforms. And under New York state law, he has the power to create, under the Moreland Act, that's the name of it, a commission to investigate allegations of misuse or unethical conduct or malfeasance. And the governor convened it to look at corruption in Albany. The commission started its work, within 6 months was issued its preliminary report, started to investigate the legislature as well as the executive. And then as part of a deal with between the government and legislative leaders, he killed the commission just when it was apparently knocking on the door of the executive branch. And so this commission, which could have been historic in terms of uncovering how Albany operates and perhaps providing ideas for meaningful reforms, was shuttered instead as part of a political deal, in some ways emblematic of what is wrong in Albany. But you're right, when the governor ran for as a candidate in 2010, he ran for governor, he said he was going to fix Albany, and that hasn't happened yet.
So we are now hearing that, of course, everybody thought he was going to have a free ride into being the governor for the third term that he's running for. He told me earlier in the game that he thought the third terms were always hard, and I think that's right. We know that. But now it looks like he may have an opponent in one Cynthia Nixon, formerly of Sex and the City, a candidate who one could describe not physically but as an attractive person who people would know and they might vote for, because it seems to me that he's done very well in New York City but not so well upstate. And that's primarily because of the Cuomo name and name recognition. Now you have somebody who also has name recognition, and it's got to scare him a little.
Well, again, as we speak, we don't really know for sure what Ms. Nixon is going to do. I mean, the media reports are that she's out hiring staff, and that they're looking at she's seriously looking at a primary run against the governor. And you're right. I mean, she would be she's well known from her acting career. She has been very deeply involved in state issues and city issues with regard to education and education funding. She's come to Albany a number of times to advocate on those issues, and has been a sort of a leader, I think, even nationwide, in looking at some of the issues dealing with gender discrimination and the rights of gay people to be protected under the law. So she's not only just an actress, she has been sort of a public figure. And given her activism credentials, I think in New York City, she would be if she got in, I think she would cause it would be a formidable challenge to the governor. Now, he's done, I think, a much better job of protecting his left flank than he did after his first two terms. After his first term in particular. And so I think it'd be harder for her to be able to make the arguments that Jessica Teachout did when she primaried the governor. Nevertheless, I would believe she would be formidable in terms of raising money. money. She would be formidable in terms of name recognition. And she has some, significant activism credentials that could pose a problem for the governor if she gets in, which is, again, as we speak, is not entirely clear. But it could cause the governor some more heartburn. But just to go back to the case for a minute, I mean, this Prococo trial is only the first of a number of trials. And so while even if he's exonerated, that may limit the problems for the governor, there are other trials to come. And if they all go to trial, more information about how Albany and New York State operates will be revealed, which could create even more pressure for the governor and the legislature to actually do something real in this reelection year to fix the way Albany operates.
I want to ask you an obscure question. Of course, we do that on this program. Let's assume she gets in, and let's assume that she loses in a primary to the governor. Is there a possibility she could be named on a third party which would draw votes from the governor in a general election?
It's tricky because of timing, right? So the political parties typically nominate their candidates in early summer, late spring or early summer, when the various conventions occur, and they name who their nominees will be. And so I think that to some extent the die will be cast, since the primary this year is the middle of September, September 13th. So if there was a primary on the Democratic side, for example, the loser, I believe, would have to have already been nominated by a minor party in order to stay on as a candidate. Now, there are political parties, the Green Party in particular, the Working Families Party, which are considered to the left of the Democratic Party and may be interested in Ms. Nixon as a candidate. But again, A, we don't know if she's really going to be in, and then B, we basically have no idea as to whether or not she would be interested in being on those minor party lines. But if she believes that she could win, then part of the game in New York is you want to be on as many lines as possible. And so my assumption would be that if she were to run, she would be very interested in being nominated on minor party lines. And if she was still on the line, she could cause, it could be a place where people could go who are not interested in voting for the Republican for whatever reason, but are uncomfortable with the governor, would give them a place to go other than just sitting it out. And that could drain off support for the governor. And in now, some ways, it sort of happened with his father when he ran for third term, as you may recall. The conservatives had nominated a candidate, and while the Republicans and conservatives together had a formidable percentage, they didn't come up with enough votes to come close to Mario Cuomo. But Mario Cuomo only won with in the low 50s, I think 51, 52% of the vote for his third term. And I think this governor, if he wants to be launched nationwide, would like to have a big win. And it's harder if there are more candidates out there.
So take us back in time, Blair Horner, to the time that the Working Families Party almost nominated Zephyr Teachout and not Governor Cuomo. And what ended up happening was, of all people, his arch enemy in present, the mayor of New York, Bill de Blasio, came in and saved his keister. Tell us about the Working Families Party. It seems to me, Blair, I know I'm going on a bit, but it seems to me that the Working Families Party has tremendous ins with the labor unions, and the labor unions are generally on Cuomo's side.
Just so everyone knows, all your listeners and everything, I mean, NYPERG is nonpartisan. We're not involved in any of these political parties.
No.
Observations are from afar. You're right, though, the Working Families Party has historically been a place where labor exerted some, particularly the progressive side of the labor movement, exercised its political muscle. I know that you're right. I mean, 4 years ago, Mayor de Blasio vouched for Governor Cuomo to be on the Working Families line. And at the time, as you may recall, the governor said he was going to get out and stump for the state Senate Democratic candidates. Fast forward till now, it's not entirely clear to me what the Working Families Party would ultimately do if there was a credible candidate to the left of the governor in terms of either a political primary or for the Working Families Party on its own. So I don't know what their plans are or what their thinking is. Clearly, the mayor and the situation between the mayor and the governor has deteriorated since it was 4 years ago. and whether or not the mayor would be interested in sort of advancing the governor's, validating the governor's effort. Who knows? But, there's a lot of things that still have to happen. There's months to go yet before the political parties have to make their decisions. I think Ms. Nixon is going to get in. We'll know relatively soon, but we certainly don't know right now.
Blair Horner, let's go from here to the Republican side. We've interviewed on this very show John DeFrancisco, the number two guy in the state Senate, a Republican. Looked like he was going to take all the marbles and be the candidate. And then in comes Mark Molinaro, who had previously said a county executive, a bright guy, an attractive person, attractive candidate without some of the blemishes of a DeFrancisco and the state Senate. And he now has taken another look at it and says he may be in. What do you make of that?
Well, I think it's because I think the Republicans are very concerned about going into the fall elections with President Trump. The unpopularity of President Trump hung around their neck. And in the case of Senator DeFrancisco, who was a very smart, very capable state legislator, but it tends to be more conservative as compared to Dutchess County Executive Molinaro, I think that they're looking for a candidate who is less likely to be tagged, or at least some of the Republicans are anyway, looking for a candidate that's less likely to be tagged as a Trump supporter. And when Mario Cuomo lost for his fourth term, he ran against this not very well-known but relatively fuzzy sort of on the issues character named George Pataki. And I think the anybody but Cuomo strategy is the one that I think at least some of the Republicans are looking at and what makes Molinaro attractive. I dealt with him a bit when he was in the Assembly. He's a very smart guy. Is extremely friendly and solicitous of ideas, even if he doesn't agree with them. A much harder candidate to attack as sort of an elbows out type of person. So it's an interesting sort of choices that the Republicans have. There are other candidates, a former housing commissioner under Pataki, a guy named Holland down from the Hudson Valley. And so there are some other candidates. Who knows how it will emerge? I think the Republicans, though, are very concerned about what at the moment looks like it could be a big blue wave in New York, and they're trying to figure out what's the best message for them to take on the governor, who has, as you know, $30-some-odd million dollars in his war chest. I think the hardest issue for whoever the candidate will be for the Republicans is whether or not they can amass enough campaign contributions to credibly take on the governor. And if there's money to do that, and whatever the candidate is who can make the best case that they're the candidate to do that, I think that's the candidate that's going to have the most likelihood of being the nominee. Yes, from our perspective, that's sort of a bad way to do it, right? The wealth primary isn't the way that we're supposed to. It's not supposed to be the first primary in who the candidates are for either political party. But that may be what ultimately entices people to open up their wallets and take on a governor who, at the moment, is looking quite formidable.
I would think. Blair Horner, you just referenced Donald Trump. What role does he play in this coming election?
Well, at the moment, I think he's a big drag for the Republicans. He's extremely unpopular in New York. Now, again, that could change. There could be things that happen. George Bush was particularly unpopular. And then because of international events, terrorist attacks, became extremely popular within the country. So you never really know, this far out. But at the moment, and certainly since he's become president, he's been extraordinarily unpopular in New York. And I assume one of the rationales for the governor framing his issues in the State of the State address about being the anti-Trump was to capitalize on New Yorkers' unhappiness with the president. So I think from a state perspective, his policies and his persona so far have created a lot of animosity among New Yorkers. And to the extent that that's hung around the neck of Republicans or more conservative candidates, I think it's going to be a big problem to win statewide in New York.
So let's compare for a moment, as we say to our students, compare and contrast. In your blue book, Jerry Brown of California and his approach towards this president, which is, to put it mildly, fiery, and that of the governor of New York. What do you think Cuomo has been doing when it comes to this president?
I think he's tried to cast himself as the anti-Trump, because he knows in New York, I think that's a popular position. I assume that's the way he views the world. But he's been less likely to take it on as a personal individual attack. attack. He tends to attack the policies. He tries to contrast his policy approach to that of the president's and describes the problems that New York faces as coming from the federal government or the Congress or Washington. And he's, I think, focused his national sort of profile on targeting House Republicans in New York, who, if the House is going to flip to become Democratic, places like New York, the Democrats will have to run the table. And so the governor, I think, is, again, it's hard to know exactly what's going on in his head. I'm not part of the team, right? But it seems like he wants to frame himself as the anti-Trump without alienating the president personally.
If you take the present situation and you just referenced the congressional races, and Cuomo in the very beginning said he was going to go after all minus one of the office holders, the Republican Congress people. So how much has he really shown that he's willing to do that? Or was that just obiter dictum for one day?
Well, we'll see, right? I mean, what's going to matter is probably starting sometime in late spring, whether or not the governor's willing to use his considerable fundraising clout and bully pulpit on behalf of the various candidates for the Democratic candidates are going to take on the Republican incumbents. I mean, since the Democratic field is not completely cleared yet, I think he's probably waiting for that to happen. And the public's really not even going to start to focus on this for a while. I mean, if there are the Democratic primaries, for example, to take on Republican incumbents, those occur in June. And so I think where you'll see the governor exert his muscle or not would be starting probably after those primaries.
Blair, I wanted to ask you very quickly about the mess in the state Senate. We know that the state Senate Democrats, we know that there are the people I call the traitors, the Democrats who now call themselves the Independent Democratic Conference. Is there any resolution on the horizon?
I think the first issue is going to be whether or not the Democrats can hold a Westchester County state Senate seat that will be up for a special election in late April, April 24th. If the Democrats hold that seat, then they technically have a numerical advantage in the Senate of 32. There's 63 senators, and so they have 32. One of those Democratic senators also ran on the Republican line and sits with the Republicans in conference. So that gives the Republicans 32. And then, as you referenced, there's the Independent Democratic Conference, which adds its votes to the Republicans in terms of keeping them in power as part of the power-sharing agreement. Now, if the Republicans take that seat in Westchester, and it's a contestable seat, then they will have 32 seats of their own, and it won't matter, right? And then all of the sort of machinations about what happens with the Democrats don't matter. If the Democrats keep that seat, then it'll be interesting because there is a come-home sort of analysis that could put a lot of pressure on the governor try to force the various parties within the Senate to come together and form a Democratic coalition.
Do you believe, you know the governor fairly well, do you believe the governor really wants a Democratic Senate?
He says he does. Well, I mean, but the wild card in all this is the state senator, Simca Felder from Brooklyn. He's the 32nd vote. The governor is the head of the Democratic Party and would have considerable influence over bringing together the mainstream Senate Democrats and Independent Democratic Conference. But Felder is the person who is the straw that stirs the drink. And how he calculates what to do, I think, is an open question. I don't think the governor can necessarily force Senator Felder to go one way or the other.
Blair Horner, we love having you on the Capitol Connection. It is our delight, and we hope you'll keep coming back. And we'll look forward to seeing you again.
Thanks for having me, Alan.
The Capitol Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capitol Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capitol Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.